From the EWTN radio and television studios, this is EWTN Theology Roundtable, a conversation with the experts of EWTN's Department of Theology. Got questions about the liturgy, scripture, or tradition? They have the answers. Now, EWTN Theology Roundtable.
Delighted that you are on here with us on the EWTN Global Catholic Network. EWTN Theology Roundtable is on the air, and this is Elena Rodriguez rolling out the red carpet, welcoming you with a broad and big smile. Today's conversation is going to be very interesting. What is the truth? That's what we're going to be talking about, public discourse and the truth. If you're listening on EWTN Radio right now, you can call us in with your questions for our expert panelists, the theology department theology advisors, Noah Lett and Robert Klesko. And welcome, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Elena.
And I'm saving the best for last. I'm saving the best for last, Colin.
Well,
you are the Vice President of Theology, so thank you very much for being our host today here on Theology.
And thank you for being our producer. We're sad to report to our audience that you are moving on to Religious Catalog, and we will no longer have you in that capacity here in radio. Yeah. So sad, but thank you for all you've done over the years on Open Line and on this program and many others.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. It has been a pleasure. It'll continue to be a pleasure. I'm delighted to continue with the EWTN Religious Catalog Department, so I will continue my relationship with the television network as well. And it's a big blessing. It's something
right.
I've always wanted to do.
Especially on the on-air dimension of that. That's important as well.
Yes. It is very much. It makes my heart happy. So.
Well, good. We want you to be happy.
And that is the truth. Very, very good. And happy is good. Joyful is good. And we hope that you are joyful listening and watching this show. We want your questions about how to discern between public discourse and the truth. And we're opening up the lines here at EWTN Radio for you. Our call screener, Matt Gubinski, is ready to take your call, and the number is 1-800-585-9396. That number again is 1-800-585-9396. You can also join us via YouTube by going to youtube.com and then typing in the search bar EWTN channel. That'll take you to our live YouTube webcasts. There's a chat there, and Mr. Michael McCall is handling social media today, so you can chat with him. I'll also be chatting with you here, and you can join in with your questions. And of course, Facebook Live. So look for the EWTN radio page on Facebook, and you can join in the chat as well and watch this show as it is being put on the air. So it's a wonderful thing. And what a great topic, gentlemen, that you have picked for our show today, public discourse and the truth. Colin, it seems like because it is all out there in the news, it's not necessarily all fit to print, huh?
No, that's true, and it fits so much in our everyday lives too. We look at the things that have happened in recent weeks and months. We have the surge of what's called fake news, but we've also had violence, where instead of using free speech to make a protest, violence is even used. So there's clearly a lack of attention to the truth, whether it's in fake news or gender ideology or political correctness on college campuses or in our everyday lives through rash judgment and through lying and so on. These are all ways in which there is a lack of respect for the truth about God, about human nature, and about neighbors. So this is what we want to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And as Christians, we're especially called to respect the truth. Jesus said, and it's recorded in the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, let what you say be simply yes or no. Mm-hmm. In other words, the truth is a very direct or very straightforward thing. It shouldn't be that difficult to speak the truth. Think of the difficulties which lying gets into us, the tales that you weave, so to speak, that you have to then remember, what was the story I told this one versus the story I told that one? What a horrible way to live, but yet the people who do that. And I think we need to recognize, too, especially as believers, that we see in God, and especially in Christ, He is the truth. In fact, He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So we have an obligation to Christ to respect the truth. We have an obligation to God who created and gave things their nature, impressing truth into the reality of creatures and into the reality of human natures, especially in our intellect and will, which reflects God's own power to know the truth and to love the good. And so we have this serious obligation to understand and to read nature and to read our own conscience and be faithful to it. Now, the Catechism, beginning at paragraph 2464, talks about this obligation to the truth. And we can say that each of the commandments, each of the Ten Commandments, in some way is a respect, calls for respect for the truth about God, the truth about man, the truth about how we ought to think. And that brings us to the Eighth Commandment, which is what we're talking about in particular today. And the Catechism notes that there are many ways in which we violate this obligation to the truth that is commanded in the Eighth Commandment. Obviously, we can lie on matters great and small. We can do that either in our private conversations or we can do that in public settings, such as perjury in court or false witness against individuals made in court. And so these are ways in which we offend against the truth. But we also do so when we don't respect other people appropriately and give an appropriate respect and honor to them. So we talk about rash judgment, assuming as true, without sufficient foundation, the fault of our neighbor. Detraction, where we use truth as a weapon by, oh, you know what so-and-so did, what this person did, what this person did, and you spread that around. That in particular is called tale-bearing when you spread yeah. stories around. Yeah. But it's a kind of detraction, speaking the truth about speaking the truth in order to destroy reputation and honor. We can use calumny, which means to make false remarks that harm individuals, or we can use scandalous words to lead them into sin, to flatter their false opinions, to flatter their sinfulness. And in many other ways, libel, contumacy, where you speak to a person's, right directly to them, and you don't show sufficient and due deference and honor to them as a child of God, as a person who has human dignity. So there are a lot of ways which we can offend against the truth. But in this one area, Noah, this area of the truth, we can talk about physical or moral violations of the truth, such as we've described. Sometimes when they fail, they lead to physical violations, if you will, to physical force. And we've seen notable examples of that in recent months.
Yeah, every one of us simply has to think about the time when we wanted to talk to somebody and they failed to persuade us when it was their turn to talk, and so they wanted to beat us up because we wouldn't take their point of view about things. And it's very clear that that kind of action is wrong person to person. It's also wrong in public. An individual, well, anybody listening to us needs to simply think about Berkeley, California, not long ago, where students went to prevent a person from speaking, and it became violent. And one student was reported to have said, quoted, "I came here to hear the speaker to make up my mind, but these protesters made it so violent that I couldn't even get in to hear the mm-hmm. speaker." They did $100,000 worth of damage, which one would have to say, wouldn't it have been better to have listened to the speaker and said, "No, I don't believe you," than to damage $100,000 worth of stuff? It was physical to the buildings. They were physical with the people that were there. The police had to shut it down because it became dangerous for the students who were there. We can go further and become aware of what happened in New York. The date for that is New York City Commission on Human Rights in December 2015 made it the case that if you were a business or a housing authority or had a public space, that you were required to say about transgendered individuals what they say about themselves. And for me to be penalized because I don't say what they say about themselves is to involve me in their head, to expand what's in their head out to in front of me, where I have to live in their head rather than in the real world that judges both of us and makes both of us pay when we disobey nature. And this is an impingement upon my freedom of conscience. It's an impingement upon the civility we both owe one another, it's an infringement upon that individual, because right now the people are in power who say that, you know, I have to do, say what they say about themselves. What about when somebody else is in power and wants to also be arbitrary, and then that person's victimized? And then, God willing, they would come to the church, where the church would defend them from being free from this kind of impingement of violence and physical violence upon their person.
Yeah, and certainly we have to say, in such a case, for those who are pushing such a view, what is it that they're posing as an alternative truth? They're imposing a personal opinion and a private inclination of an individual, whether it's same-sex marriage or whether it's gender ideology. It's imposing a personal inclination of the individual on others, as you said, as if to reorder society and reorder the world according to an interior logic, yes, not according to the logic of the world. And, of course, we did our show last month on utopias, which is where ideology becomes the necessity to rearrange the world according to the universe that is in my head, not according to the universe which God, if you believe in him, or even nature or evolution, if you believe in those, independent of God, the way that is ordered, the way reality is ordered. Yes. Now, we could go on and on. There are 10 million examples of this. Our audience knows them all. What is a Christian to do, Robert, faced with this kind of a world we're in today?
What do we do about it to start to bring about a change? I'd like to just offer one point for contemplation. I think what we have to do is constantly, in our minds and on our lips, be talking about the dignity of the human person, because truth is connected to person. All right, and in our modern culture, we're dealing with two competing visions of man. We've got the secular vision of man, which is relativistic. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm free only when I create my own truth, I create my own reality. It's that dictatorship of relativism that Pope Benedict was constantly speaking about. And really, this is we know this from the culture, from just watch the news for 5 minutes. It's chaos. It's chaotic. And it makes communicating the truth impossible. Because if Noah has one truth, and Robert has another truth, and Colin has another truth, and we try to sit down and have a conversation, well, I can't trust that either of you are using words the same way that I am. Mm-hmm. And so how can we even communicate? Well, we can't. And I think we're seeing that friction. We're seeing that friction in our culture, because when the truth I've created rubs up against reality, yes, the real truth as God has set forth in his creation, well, that's going to cause friction. Yeah. And that friction can lead to frustration. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that. It's evident. And then, Noah, you gave some examples of the violence. You know, when people are trying to organize a conversation and people are reacting violently. Yeah. So we know that's not the way to go. The way to go is the Catholic vision of man, the Catholic vision of the human person, where we're not the masters of reality. We're operators in reality. We're observers of reality. And that reality is sacred because it's God's reality. He's created us and put us in this creation, and we are seeking the truth. We are seeking the truth. We're sacred because, number one, we're made in the image and likeness of God, which includes our rationality, which includes our intellect.
Yeah.
And because we have intellect, we're the only creature, not dogs, not cats, not mice, we're the only creature that God has created with a body. Of course, angels are intelligent beings, who can share insights. Mm-hmm. And so not only can we recognize the truth, but we can also converse about the truth, and we have an obligation there. We have an obligation to share the truth with one another. So when you lay those visions of man side by side, you know, we've got the more attractive vision. It's head and shoulders above the secular vision, because in our view, in the Catholic vision of man, we're free. We're free. We have that real freedom. We're not bound to the slavery of, well, I need to adjust my truth minute to minute based on how I feel. We can know the truth and we can be confident in it. We have an obligation to dialogue because the truth is so beautiful. The truth is, you know, the truth is so wonderful because it's contemplating God's creation that it has to be shared. Mm. And not only that, in our conversations with one another, we have the opportunity to refine our vision of the truth. In Proverbs chapter 27, it says, iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens the wits of another. And so when I'm talking to Noah and we're talking about truth, well, I might have a vision of truth, Noah has a vision of truth, we're on the same wavelength, but we help one another to refine that vision. We're coming into a sharper focus of God's creation.
And I think it's important to note that in such conversations, it doesn't mean that you don't respect that each of you have opinions mm-hmm. as well as possession of the truth. But in dialogue and through respect, you can give a space to opinion to work out what could be held in common. And I think that's maybe after the break we can pick that idea of dialogue up, because certainly that's something that is woefully missing in our political and cultural discourse today.
We'll continue with more of this very interesting conversation with Colin Donovan, Noah Lett, and Robert Klesko. Public discourse and the truth. You can ask, too. How would you handle somebody who questions your truth with their truth? 1-800-585-9396. 1-800-585-9396. Stay tuned.
Debbie Giorgiani. Please encourage your siblings and you to constantly be aware of this and heal from it, because you deserve to have a great relationship with both your parents. When you came into this world, you deserve that. My prayers are with you, and you sound like a great, great person, and I'm just happy you had enough. I'm happy you had enough courage to call in, because a lot of people don't want to call in about this.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, Monday through Saturday, noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Toddlers are really cute until they don't get what they want. Then they throw things, stomp their feet, and scream. There's a toddler inside your head, you know. It's cute until your life doesn't go your way. Then that inner voice yells, screams, and kicks until you're exhausted. The best thing to do with a toddler who's having a tantrum isn't to engage that tantrum head on. It's to divert her attention to something else. The same is true with that little voice in your head. Look, maybe you're feeling disappointed by life events, expectations that weren't met, hurt by someone you love. It's okay to feel pain. But once your mind starts kicking and screaming and locking you in a cycle of dark, negative thinking, it's time to disengage. Use your will to direct your thinking in a different direction. And as St. Paul said, set your mind on things above. Things that lift you up instead of dragging you down. Things that fill you with life instead of deflating you. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to EWTN Theology Roundtable on EWTN Radio and Television. Join our conversation with your question or comment. Call us toll-free, 1-800-585-9396. Outside the United States and Canada, call 1-205-9396. 271-2985, or send us an email, etr@ewtn.com.
That's right. We are taking email during the show, etr@ewtn.com. To ask your questions to our panelists, Colin Donovan, Noah Lett, and Robert Klesko today, talking about public discourse and the truth. Now, certainly, we've been dialoguing, and when we dialogue, we kind of find out that we have more similarities than we have differences. So there's that friendship element, even though we might have different ideas. What is the role of dialoguing here?
It's very important, because there are certain black and white things morally and certainly in religion and theology that you can talk about. But you have to get other people to agree that they are true, and that's what the purpose of dialogue is to do. It doesn't assume that somebody is, you know, my enemy because he doesn't believe what is true that I know as a Christian. And so the dialogue is important in helping both the person who possesses the truth and the person who does not yet possess it.
And isn't it sad that in our culture right now, anytime there's a controversial question, when you put two people in a room and they're going to talk about something, it's like you're set. There's no other way to think about it than, well, this is my enemy, and we're going to go at it. that friendship. So thank you, Elena, for bringing that up. That friendship, that recognition. And again, I go back to our Catholic anthropology. If I recognize that all other human beings are made in the image and likeness of God and have infinite value and dignity, well, then when we sit down to talk, even about a controversial subject, I'm going to make myself vulnerable. I'm going to make myself vulnerable to this other person who is also seeking truth. And even if I have to hear some things that I don't agree with, well, they still have the right to talk. They still have the right to dialogue. And I would hope that we can get to that point in our culture where even though there are deep disagreements, just sitting around a table in fellowship, not at each other's throats, not in violence, but in fellowship and discussing with one another these vitally important topics. And we need the Holy Spirit. We need God's mercy to soften our culture in order to get us to that point. So we need lots of prayers and sacrifice and penance.
A valuable thing to say is that the reason they become enemies is maybe not because I don't like you, but I'm taught to listen to your words. And if you use certain words that I'm taught that you shouldn't use, then I say you shouldn't do that, and I stop you from sharing your thoughts because you're not using the special words that I expect you to use.
Yeah.
And because you do use the words that I've been taught that you shouldn't use, I call you racist, I call you bigot, I call you other things, not because I'm addressing your ideas, but because you happen to have used the wrong word.
We do the same thing. I mean, we're capable of doing it. We have done it, and we may do it again in evangelizing, that it becomes a sort of brute force approach. That in recognizing the dignity in other, we should recognize that they will come and gradually it will infiltrate their conscience and they will say, yes, what you're telling me is truth. We want them to do it right now. And I wonder how often that is really more because it's flattering to our ego. But I think I mentioned before the break about having dialogue helps both the person who possesses the truth and the person who does not yet. The person who possesses the truth has the truth. Now they get to exercise charity. The person who doesn't possess may actually be following their conscience diligently with a great deal of justice to it and with charity, but they're not full because they don't have the truth. And if they're a good person, they're open to the truth, they will eventually have it. We don't have to be uncharitable in giving them the space and the time to be attracted by the truth of what we say or what the church says or of our political position. We can persuade, and we ought to try to do that.
Yeah. Teaching the truth in love.
It's not uncommon that when you're talking to somebody, you know, you probably need to say to them, you know, look, I recognize you're having trouble thinking your thoughts, so just think out loud, and I'll take no offense at what you say, because you're just trying to think out things, and I know you're trying to be respectful by not using profanity and other things, but you may not know how to say what you're going to say, so why don't you just think out loud, and I'll accommodate you. Now, that's making space for somebody to share with you, and they understand that then you're their friend. Because you're using all your superpowers. Maybe you're the college professor dealing with the kid, you know, that's a first-year freshman, and they're afraid. They can't think in your presence. No, come on. Let's take time. Let's make space for how you're going to say it. And don't say, oh, please don't use this word or that word or the other word, and then you pull out a long list of 20 pages, and then all the word keywords are on there that you want to think about. How can I think when I have to remember a vocabulary of 20 pages that I can't say these words?
And I'm hearing more and more that's just exactly the kind of environment that kids coming out of high school are finding in their colleges today. Elena, let's take our first question here before our hard break.
Speaking of dialoguing, Daniel is in Lafayette, Louisiana, listening to us through Christ Our King Radio. Daniel, please go ahead with your question, sir.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Colin. We have a Bible study coming up this Monday. And it seems to fit in with what y'all are talking about. We call it our new style Bible study. It's basically Catholic, and we have people from the different denominations that come over, and we actually talk about our differences. What I'm planning on doing for this Monday is I found a scripture that intrigued me, and it's where Paul is talking, I believe, to the Corinthians, and he says, if anyone comes preaching a different Jesus than the one we preach,
mm-hmm.
or anyone comes preaching a different gospel than the one we preach, you know?
Yeah.
So I believe that you have to, the word says we don't live by bread alone, by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So it's a mistake if we pick and choose out of the scriptures. You have to be able to include all of them, which I believe is what the church does.
Exactly right. The church has done that interpretive work for us because it's easy for us to take things out of context. But when we look to the church, we can never go astray. And I applaud you on your efforts. I did that in the Navy. I did that out when I came to work in the working world. And it's a very fruitful way to dialogue with others. That you may be recognized for the Catholic opinion in the group, but that's not a bad thing either.
And we're very glad you joined us, Daniel. Clara, you're next on the other side of the break. You can join in too. Public discourse and the truth. How do you handle somebody else's truth in a friendly way so that you can convince them? Our panel of experts here, Colin Donovan, Noah Lett, and Robert Klesko, are here to answer your questions. 1-800-585-9396. 1-800-585-9396. Stay tuned.
Most men will do almost anything to avoid deep theological discussions. Well, you don't need a doctorate in theology to listen to and enjoy the Catholic Cafe. Join me, Deacon Jeff Drzymski, along with my trusty sidekick, Tom Dorian, as we try and make manly sense out of living the Catholic faith.
The Catholic Cafe, Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern and Sundays at 5 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Live truth, live Catholic.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Can you imagine the world without Judy Garland? The way she sang Over the Rainbow and The Wizard of Oz has touched generations. But she was almost aborted. Sid Luft, Garland's former husband, recalled before he died that her parents, Ethel and Frank Gum, weren't happy with another pregnancy and wanted to have an abortion. So they went to a friend for advice who was a medical student. The friend told them to go home and have their third child. So they did, and a star was literally born. Ironically, Judy Garland went on to play a leading role in the remake of the film, A Star is Born. There have been 60 million abortions in America. It makes you wonder how many beautiful songs were left unsung because the voices were silenced by abortion.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
EWTN is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If your cable or satellite provider doesn't carry EWTN's full programming lineup, give them a call and let them know you would like to receive EWTN 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
For more information, go to EWTN.com and click on television.
Welcome back to EWTN Theology Roundtable on EWTN Radio and Television. Join our conversation with your question or comment. Call us toll-free, 1-800-585-9396. Outside the United States and Canada, call 1-205-271-2985 or send us an email, etr@EWTN.com.
That's right. Theology Roundtable is on the air. Today's topic, the public discourse and the truth. How do you respond to truth? What is truth? The number is 1-800-585-9396. We are also checking our email, etr@EWTN.com, with your questions today for Colin Donovan, the Vice President of the Theology Department here at EWTN and our host, and for our theology advisors, Robert Klesko and Noah Lett, our panel and our experts today answering the question, public discourse and the truth. And Daniel, we want to ask you, make sure your question was very interesting. What if somebody teaches a different Jesus or a different truth? Did that answer your question? Do you have a follow-up?
Well, I was hoping maybe Colin could tell me what would be an example of someone teaching a different Jesus.
Well, I think you could look at Well, no, actually, I think you had an example from Galatians, didn't you? They were teaching a different Jesus there, and Paul had to rebuke them.
Yeah, the understanding is that in Galatians, Paul is dealing with some people that have come in his absence to the Galatians and told them that they're saved by the law and not by the gospel of the death of Jesus Christ. And so he corrects them and tells them in forceful language, you know, who has bewitched you, O Galatians? This only would I learn from you, not to do what you're doing, because someone else is preaching to you another gospel. One can think of also the heresies in the church. If you start preaching that Jesus Christ is only a man, or that he's only a God and not a man as well. I mean, these are Jesuses that are not the person that came from the womb of Mary and that died on the cross for us and ascended into heaven. So I guess I would summarize it by simply saying another gospel is one that says what the church teaches is wrong and this other thing is right.
Well, you know, if you look back historically, the first thing they did, they get rid of the mystical Jesus, the church. That allows them to take Jesus and do what they want with him, and now they start reshaping Jesus to conform to what is in the mind, and now we're at the part where we're reshaping Adam, as it were, to conform to what is in the mind. And what's left? We get rid of God, we get rid of Jesus, we get rid of Adam, in other words, human nature as it is. Yeah. There's nothing left except an insane world and a brave new world where nothing that is, where truth, where nothing is true and everything is a lie.
Yeah. It's difficult to communicate to people the thing they take for granted when it's so taken for granted. Your ability to express your thoughts without censorship so that you can find the truth. When you are afraid to say what you think, which saying it might actually be a wrong thing, but then there's somebody sitting in front of you that can actually say, have you considered this?
Yeah.
You know, have you considered this? And then they lay something before you, maybe it's five conversations, but at the end of which you might say, like so many have said, I am so glad that I met a person that let me say what I thought, because now I am corrected, and I am so grateful because I met the Savior.
You know, this is so much in advance. I think was something that the Second Vatican Council spoke of. Certainly something St. Jose Maria Escriva, who I'm very attracted to as a saint, in terms of the lay apostolate, is primarily lay people, well-informed lay people, courageous, fervent lay people who will influence people to come to the clergy and to be received into the church. There's been a revolution in that has included EWTN and other Catholic media apostolates, obviously, but there's such a possibility of a new age, as it were, in that respect, if we simply dispose ourselves to help out and to do that.
Yeah, and I think we can't ever doubt the power that we as informed, faithful Catholics have in our own spheres of influence. We might not think, you know what, I don't have a TV network, so I just go to church on Sunday, say my prayers, and I'm good. I don't have to share the truth outside of that hour-long exchange or my private personal devotions. But, you know, you've got that neighbor who you see every morning getting the paper, just saying, good morning, God bless you, I hope you have a wonderful day. That could be all the difference to opening a door to an extended conversation about who Jesus Christ is. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes that's all it takes. You know, you don't have to have the eloquence of Paul or the deep wisdom of Saint John to be an evangelist.
Yeah. Just to share the truth. The truth
that's
has
right.
power in itself.
That's right.
And we have the truth and power in itself, God being the truth. The truth with a capital T. Call in with your questions about public discourse and the truth. The number is 1-800-585-9396. That number again is 1-800-585-9396. It is the number that Clara dialed, and she is in Colorado. She is listening to us through Denver Catholic Radio. Clara, welcome to Theology Roundtable. Go ahead with your question, please.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes,
you're welcome.
The question here is, if you have the truth, yeah, and you try to talk about this with your colleagues at work, and you find a rejection, and even almost hysterical that you are not supposed to say this or to talk about this in this place. However, you receive through email a lot of like invitations for sex week and, you know, all this celebration from that group that, you know, is,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so, and how protected I am, because I am part of the Respect Life group in my church, and I have consulted with them, and they say if you start to talk about protect, you know, the unborn or not to assist in suicide, which my colleagues keep talking about, that this is great. How can I, you know, can I? I am protected, and I protected legally. Where do I stand?
Well, we're not legal scholars here. That's not the service we can provide you. But let me say this. Be prepared to give a reason for your hope, is what we're told in Scripture. The workplace is the workplace. Your duty as a Christian is to perform your job to the best of your ability, to be a compatible colleague for your other men and women at your workplace. And if somebody asks you, well, what do you think about the euthanasia law or abortion or what, then answer them honestly, you know, that you don't think that this is right. I would suggest you have biblical reasons, of course, church teaching reasons, and I think you should have natural law reasons as well, that if people make these decisions about human beings who are innocent and innocent and have no one to stand up for them, what will they do about us when we're old and if nobody, you know, there's a lot of good natural logic reasons why most of these things are wrong, the young and the old, the killing of either. So I think be prepared to give a reason for your hope and keep that in mind, and you don't have to be abrasive, you don't have to be, you know, thump the Bible in people's faces or anything like that in order to sow the seed and pray, accompany that with prayer that God will water it with the shine of the light of His grace, and so on. Yeah.
And pray especially for opportunities for those people at your work to come to you and ask you those questions. We don't always, very few people are called to go out on the street corner and preach the gospel with a bullhorn. But we can certainly pray that, you know, Lord, put in my life today people who need to hear your word, and I'll speak it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, I think some states are more difficult environments to deal with these issues than, say, Alabama. Alabama's been pretty good to the Catholics, despite our small numbers here. So you can do what you're able. Your family depends upon you, but also have some confidence in God as well, that if you push that envelope a little bit, that God will protect you. And remember, rejoice if in the end it gets you fired. Don't make that as your object, certainly, but rejoice if you, having used every prudent means possible, there are those who hate the truth so much that they would push you out.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you yourself have experienced persecution because of defending the truth, and how do you handle that? How do you work through this spiritually and becoming even a stronger person in your faith? Run this by our EWTN theology experts, Colin Donovan, Noah Lett, and Robert Klesko. The number to call is 1-800-585-9396. We have one line open there. It's time to call, and you can get in still into this show, 1-800-585-9396. We have a vibrant YouTube community. I want to say hi to all our YouTubers on the EWTN page on YouTube. And David is asking a question, gentlemen. David says, the biggest conflict I find with truth is with people who are pro-life. They are fixated on what they believe is right, in parentheses, the right to choose life, but they dismiss anything else or anything to the contrary. How do I respond to people who are fixated on the right to choose only?
Well,
that's their truth.
It's difficult because they're denying some very basic things. Imagine what you have to deny. You have to deny what every biology and embryology book tells you. And when that is that when the sperm and ovum fuse, you have a cat, a dog, a monkey, a fish, a human being. And so they have to deny the scientific fact. They have to impose a category. Well, but if you're putting buts in there, then you're not respecting the truth. And that's what they're doing. Well, it's not a person. Well, that's not a a civil category, really, the science tells us what's true. And I don't know how you can help that except insist on the facts of the matter. And I don't understand why you can't accept that your life began at your conception, not 6 months past your conception, not the day before you were born. It seems to me a straightforward fact.
Here we have a wonderful example of something. We are not like the world who only believes what they can see is what's happening. We are the world, we are the people of Jesus Christ of God, who know that when we see nothing happening, God is working. So I need not be the one to enforce, be physical with somebody or get loud in your face like they're loud at mine, because I know that there is the God who is not silent when I am made to be silent. And I can pray to him while that person is talking to me, and I know that God in his providence is working for that person. I need not resort to violence. I know that part of my task in talking to the people who are pro-choice is to not only tell them things when they need to hear them, but also to listen to them so that they can understand that I can understand what they're saying, and that they understand that I am not a threat to them.
Yeah.
Because I have a God who is not silent, who is not working. As Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, oh, maybe your God is off like in the restroom, and that's why he doesn't hear you. No, my God is not off. My God is God, yeah. And he is working.
Yeah. And I think, too, Terry was asking about the sort of the psychology of it, too. How do you convince a person so convinced that their false idea is correct? We have to think of what a universe has been created. They very often probably first accepted that birth control was legitimate, mm-hmm. and then that abortion was legitimate, and then that same-sex marriage was legitimate. They've created a whole universe, mm-hmm. and we have a whole culture of people, probably somewhere a quarter to a half of the country, that have created this unreal universe, mm-hmm. in which reality is not real, in which the thing which is false is true. Mm-hmm. And so it's a tremendous job, and I think that's why prayer is the key.
Yeah, and I think we have to understand that on both sides, because I know some very good Catholics that once they've learned the faith, it's theirs, and they become possessive of it. And when somebody tries to attack, well, they attack back. Mm-hmm. They don't dialogue, they attack. That's very easy to do. You know, you can build for yourself these castles of truth, and you're not going to come out of them. And so to what I was speaking about earlier, we have to make ourselves a little bit vulnerable, mm-hmm. in that we have to lower our defenses. And even if someone is saying something that's very much against what we believe, giving them the opportunity to say something, that's charity. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's our own Christian witness, it's our own understanding, it's our own ability to listen, that helps the other person lower their defenses, mm-hmm. so that you can get to the point where you're having an open and honest dialogue. Yeah. So I think that's important on both sides, that shared vulnerability, in order to have those conversations that bring people to Christ. You need that.
And historically, that's certainly been the case, whether it's back to the Socratics or whether it's at the time of the Middle Ages when you had Christian philosophers, Jewish philosophers, and even Islamic philosophers discussing the same fundamental questions, which could, under the guise of philosophy as opposed to religion, and coming to quite similar answers, but, each in their own way. This seems almost an impossible thing today, where everybody takes a, as you, I think, well described it, establishes a castle, takes a fortress, builds a moat around, mm-hmm. it, fills it with alligators. Must be in Florida or Alabama, and defends it to the last death, to the death.
Yeah. We can only hope that individuals who like that meet a Christian person who understands that the task that we do is not created by ourselves. The truth we proclaim is not made and sustained by my effort. I can be dead and it will still be here. Mm-hmm. So I can have a patience and a strength that doesn't come from merely being limited to the cleverness of my rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And they can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Public discourse adds, and the truth is our topic here on EWTN Theology Roundtable. How far are you willing to go to defend the truth of our Lord Jesus Christ? Give us a call and share with us. Share your question, 1-800-585-9396. Still have time for you, 1-800-585-9396. We go to Jackson, Mississippi, where Charlie is listening to us very attentively. Charlie, your question for Colin Donovan, Robert Klesko, and Noelette. Go right ahead, sir.
Oh, wow. Hey, y'all. I am calling because I've had an experience where I was removed from a position because of holding on to the truth of the gospel and how we were to behave in a work environment. I moved especially to Mississippi to work with the deaf and disabled population, and they use signs language. So I became fluent in signs language to work with the deaf population, specifically in the state of Mississippi, because they were in dire need. And I got out here, and a position was promised to me. But when I got into this location, there was this strong, long-established bureaucracy in which they had a deaf person who had received a fraudulent advanced degree in a position that they were not actually able to maintain. And then they were passing deaf and hard of hearing students with what looked like an appropriate degree, but they were actually only passing through at a remedial level. I don't know if that makes sense, but in short, I moved into a position where it was an established norm to exploit the disabled population for the profit and advantage, to create what looked like a successful program on the outside so that they could continue to receive government funding. But what was actually happening on the inside was that they were just sort of passing kids through. There was like social promotion, and there was a lot of covering up. And I thought, that's not what Christ calls us to do at all. We're supposed to advocate and protect, especially those of us who are the most in need. And I saw that there was just a lot of manipulated information.
Well, I mean, this in any job, it can come up that, let's say, you a financial related job, you could see embezzlement. This is almost a species of embezzlement, as misuse and misappropriation. You know, there are these kinds of cases all the time. There is the tendency not to speak up regarding various kinds of physical or harassment in the workplace and other places. Whether it's in Congress or the White House historically or wherever it is, probably on the Supreme Court itself, you know, or in our churches, in our parishes, in our schools. There is a general rule in moral theology that you don't have to go to grave inconvenience unless there is a grave injustice. So the lesser things can be overlooked if they would put you, put you at a disadvantage in a particular job, but the greater things, such as you describe, I would put in that category. Yes, we have to take a moral stand. We have to take a stand of fidelity to the dignity of those that we serve, or the responsibilities, legal or other, in the workplace. So it's those are challenges, and I thank you for your witness in the workplace. Not everybody is prepared to do that.
And take courage in the example of people like St. Thomas More, who, you know, somebody who was doing an incredibly difficult job and would not tolerate corruption that went against the Catholic faith, and he lost his life for it. I think you can have a more contemporary example in somebody like Lila Rose, who, you know, as a college student, worked to expose Planned Parenthood. I mean, here's someone who's just a simple, smart college student who's dedicated her life to exposing their corruption. Now, I'm not saying you're called necessarily to that, but there are people in our world today who are standing up against evil and corruption and bringing it to the light. And that's also an important aspect of standing up for the truth.
How true. Yes.
There's a great line in A Man for All Seasons, which is based on notes taken by Roper, the son-in-law of Thomas Moore, that first became a play and then was made into the movie. But there's that discussion where he talks about with his daughter about whether he would take the oath of supremacy or not. And he explains how, you know, if there's any wiggle room in the words at all, if there's any way he can find a space that he can fit through morally, he would do it for the sake of his family, for the sake of his country, to stay chancellor because of the good that he'd do there. But in the end, he could find no such wiggle room, and so he had to stand up. And he had went as far as he could morally go in that. And it's a good example of to think through how I can tackle this problem. Our first reaction is usually just to react and to speak out sharply and be abrasive ourselves in the defense of something. But there are ways to do it and accomplish it prudently. And in the end, there may not be any way except that sharp word spoken out against injustice. Mm-hmm. And if you are led to that point, you have to do it. But that's a great movie. This may be this time of the year when we should be watching that and seeing how to deal with the injustice given to a whole society and within a whole society.
Kathy's in Cleveland, Ohio, listening to us through the rock. Kathy, we just have about a minute and a half. Please go ahead with your question quickly.
Oh, hi. Thank you. My question is just on dealing with family members, you know, that claim to be Catholic but don't always follow the truth on a lot of these issues that you're talking about, especially pro-life issues. I have 7 children and always struggling with trying to defend, you know, the possibility that there could be another, and what are you thinking, you know, and it's just very hard when it's your family, when it's your mother, your sister, people like that who you think should love you for all, you know, for always, and don't always do that because they have their own agenda or their own ideas in their mind, you know.
Well, they're not in this marriage and this family, so right there.
Yeah.
You have all the authority you need. But it reminds me of that expression, no, a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country and among his own people.
Yeah. And she should remember, how important is it to convince these people? Your truth does not depend on them being convinced. Who do you have to convince? Is it necessary to convince these people? Maybe your husband and you know, understand that you convince one another. But be careful that you don't make other people the standard of your peace, because you have to convince them in order for yourself to have peace.
Yeah.
You don't need them.
If you're at peace with God on these issues, that's the ultimate peace. You don't need much more than that.
And we have Steve in New York. Steve, we have less than a minute, but please share your comment with us, sir. Real quick. Steve, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Real quick.
Hey, Steve.
We're about to close.
Okay. Fake news epidemic. When I tuned in, I thought this is what this conversation is really all about. Your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth. As a society, we've gotten away from critical thinking, metaphysics.
Yep.
You know, you don't necessarily have to bring Jesus into the conversation right away.
Exactly.
To Aristotle and his four causes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. In fact, in a pluralistic society, it's usually best to start with natural law thinking and reason.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, truthfully, because you've done a tremendously deep and thorough job. Colin Donovan, Noah Lett, and Robert Klesko, your EWTN theology experts here on EWTN Theology Roundtable next month, continuing with a very interesting topic. So stay tuned to more of good, solid Catholic programming. This is Elena Rodriguez wishing you the best, God's blessing, and asking you to always follow He who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. God bless you and be truthful always.